You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
Well, hello. Good to see many faces I recognize, even from older pastors and new faces that I don't know. So anyways, I've received a very hearty welcome. My family's very grateful for the kindness that has been showed to us, and God's provision. I'm not somebody who actually likes to talk about myself. I think more other people are way more interesting, but I think there's a Jewish proverb. If you're ever in trouble, just say it's a proverb of some sort, and you know, who's to say? But I can't remember the author who said this, but I do believe they were Jewish, that God made human beings because he loves a good story. And, you know, we all bear some kind of mark of having to traverse and struggle and journey. You know, it's life, as much as we want to make it an escalator ride from A to B, it just rarely is that. It's a more circuitous, strange kind of thing. And so, and my wife, Beth, is a mental health counselor, and she does private practice counseling. And, you know, she's taught me a lot about you can find God at work if you just listen to people and listen to their stories. And so hopefully today you'll get a sense of just in one minute small place that God has been at work as he's healing and redeeming and restoring his creation. So I was born to first-generation college-educated parents from Appalachia up in southern Ohio. And so that's why I don't talk with a southern accent. Y'all are like, where is he from? My young childhood was spent up in Ohio, and my father was lived on a farm in a farming community. And I do have memories as a young child going to my grandfather's church there. It's just a little Methodist church in the country, and just sweet people with potlucks after church. And, you know, I remember he singing, you know, he walks with me, he talks with me, those kinds of things. But that was the only time I really went to church. My family was not into the church thing or scene. My father, he would say he's a Christian. He believes the Christian story. But we weren't catechized or brought up, or even ideas like prayer weren't present in our house. In fact, I mean, very good Midwestern kind of valued home, right? Where it's like, be a good person. It was very humanist, right? Like, do unto others, a golden rule kind of thing. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. But like, basically, do the right things and life will kind of work out. It was kind of a vague optimism. But also, like, when hardship comes, you just kind of like, yeah, you just grit through it. Just go through it, you know? And, or shrug your shoulders and go, oh, yeah, it happens. Some people have better luck than others. So it was a very bland kind of spiritual reality in my home where there wasn't really any impression of something bigger, something grander, a bigger story to live into. It was just, yeah, people are born, they kind of live a life, and then they die, and the cycle continues. It was very, you know, a little arresting, perhaps, to you if you had a different kind of upbringing. But my parents were very caring, very loving. I had two sisters. I was a middle child. And so Stephanie was kind of she was your kind of first child overachiever, really got a lot of praise. My younger sister, Courtney, got a lot of attention and care. I was kind of that forgotten middle child in a lot of ways, but I was the boy. And so I earned pretty quickly and early on a reputation for being the word that was used. It's like, you know, you have those phrases or you can hear a voice and it's like nails on a chalkboard in the back of your mind. I was called ornery a lot. So whenever I hear the word ornery, I just cringe. But that was my personality. I think it was the fiery red hair. I didn't want to do what everybody wanted to do. I was a little bit of a problem. Problem child. Dennis the Menace kind of complex a little bit. Liked to pull pranks on people, and I was not like a good person, really. Still am not. Still working on that one. My family moved to Atlanta, though, for my father's job. He was with NCR, National Cash Register, and so they were moving their headquarters from Ohio to Atlanta. And so we came, and so I say I'm a northerner by birth, a southerner by the grace of God. I claim the living in the South, in marrying Beth, she said, do not take me above the Mason-Dixon. You know, that was kind of like the mandate. So God might call us to Hawaii. We might be open to that, but not north of the Mason-Dixon. So we moved down when I was about 8 years old into Georgia. And so to give you a sense of my outlook on life, I guess, I just wanted to have fun. And so I ended up like a lot of young boys who had, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you just had a lot more freedom to roam the streets and be gone in the morning and you come back for dinner at night. And I did all the things a boy in my community did, which was steal from the Eckerd drugs and go smoke in the woods and make fires in the woods, find bags of onions and throw them through office windows. I was in seventh grade when all this happened. And I was generally just up to no good with a lot of free time on my hands. I do remember when I was young, I had a fear of death because I had a tornado hit our town in Ohio when I was little. And so I remember being afraid when tornadoes and storms would happen. And so I had this recurring nightmare of a tornado hitting our house and everything kind of being blown apart in my bed. Somehow I was always intact in my bed, but in the middle of my yard. And it was like everything was destroyed. And this was like something that happened periodically. And I'd wake up in a sweat and kind of breathing heavy, you know. So I do remember, actually, and this is probably just the influence of Little House on the Prairie, but just praying at night, you know, now I lay my head down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Again, I wasn't catechized in a religious way, but that's just all that I knew. So I think I always had an underlying baseline of there is something more. And I remember having a mobile hanging from my ceiling when I was in like fourth grade or fifth grade. And I was really fascinated with the universe, with the planets and how far they were, how big they were, just the sense of the expansion of the cosmos. And I remember laying in bed at night just imagining, what's that, if the universe is expanding, what's it expanding into? What's beyond the universe? And wait a minute, where did this universe come from? I was thinking deep thoughts for a fifth grade boy. And I just had this just conviction in me that there is something and there's someone. But it's probably still very deistic, right? So in middle school, I got involved in sports. And because of that, up in high school, I was 16 years old, and I was on the football team, and one night, some of the football players just showed up at my house. I was like getting ready for dinner with my family, and they just showed up and said, "Hey, we're taking Adam." And it was kidnap night at Young Life Club. And don't let that give you a bad view of Young Life, but it was basically like, go get a friend and bring him here. And some of my buddies on the football team just knew that I wasn't a church going guy, and. But they were like, no, you'll like this. So they just grabbed me and took me. And I was like, I had no idea where I was going. Showed up at this Young Life meeting. And they're just, you know, it's basically a youth ministry for kids that don't go to church. And so we sang songs, played the games. And I started hearing these adults who were just really friendly just start talking about simple stories about Jesus. And again, I hadn't heard. I vaguely knew culturally Jesus, okay, you know, that's the religious guy in sandals. But I really didn't know anything of who Jesus of Nazareth was. And so for the first time, I started hearing these stories, and I was like, are these true? Did this guy really live? There has to be. There's like an echo of this in our culture. Like, people seem to like be drawn to this. And I was just feeling warmly drawn to this this message of the God-man who wants to have a relationship with you. And that's Young Life's whole philosophy is, you know, God doesn't wait for us to come to him to ascend the mountain. He comes down and comes among us and brings life on life. He connects with people. He reaches out to people. And that started to resonate with me. Because like many adolescents, I was in a world where I was the class clown. I was just trying to get girls' attention. I was trying to be an athlete and make my name known, you know, as a tough guy. I didn't really know who I was going to be. And I was desperate to be known, to be seen, and not really for something that I'm doing, just because somebody cared about me. And I started to see that through this Young Life thing. And so my girlfriend was going to the weekend camp. And as you do, you're like, okay, my girlfriend's going, I'm going to go too. So that hooked me in. So I went. It was a Valentine's weekend in February of my junior year of high school. And so I went to Windy Gap, North Carolina. And this is just a great Young Life camp. I still think Young Life does camp better than almost anybody. It's really good. And I just had this weekend camp experience where it's a lot of fun, but one night, you know, they give you the cross talk, and they talk about what Jesus did on the cross and what it means for you. And then they send you out, these teenagers out, and they're like, hey, you have to go out on the property somewhere, but spend 20 minutes of quiet. Just think about this. Talk to God about it. Have an individual time. And so I think I was struck by how hungry I was to hear that God loves me that much. And I remember sitting on the hillside, so this was like my mountaintop experience. I mean, I was literally on a mountain looking over this lake at Windy Gap, North Carolina. The moon just, it seemed like the moon and stars were hanging so low I could just like touch them. And the reflection in the lake, the coolness of the night, huddled up in my fleece. And I just said, God, yes, I'm in. And it just, you know, in the John Wesley sense, I was strangely warmed by this knowledge. And so I started going to like a weekly Bible study with some of my Young Life leaders. And they gave me like the Josh McDowell, More Than a Carpenter, all these like kind of apologetics books from that era. And I just started reading the Bible for the first time. And I was just blown away when I was reading this message of a God who's pursuing his people through their waywardness and sin and difficulty. And, you know, it's not to say that my life magically changed, but I was, you know, my ship had a rudder now. You know, I wasn't just kind of floating out there, kind of from pinging from thing to thing. I felt like I had meaning in my life that wasn't tied to achievement or reputation, or status. I felt free. I felt light, actually. So I went to, so for college, I actually, I've told this story before in other settings. I'm ashamed at this point in life, but I have to look back and admit it. I didn't know what I was going to do, but my dad worked down at Georgia Tech in Atlanta, down near there, and so I grew up as a Georgia Tech fan, actually. And you know, Craig's introduced me before as the Georgia Bulldog, but I didn't grow up with red and black. I grew up with blue and gold, and I'd go to some games with my dad and things like that. But I started at Georgia Tech my freshman year and got involved in kind of a Bible study. There was a lay campus minister. And, you know, I was just like eating up. I was rushing a fraternity and going to the Bible study stuff. Not a lot of class. That was not as interesting to me. And, I just started reading the Bible. And, you know, God, and it was dispensational and a little weird. And I had, like, these charts of, like, the prophecies of Daniel and, like, end times prophecy stuff. And I started putting these charts up in my dorm room and stuff and really getting into. But I was, for the first time, I had read the whole Bible through my first quarter at Georgia Tech. And I was just like, this is amazing. And seeing the connection between the Old Testament and the New Testament and how Christ is the fulfillment of these things. It just started, like, sparks were flying, you know, like, I tell people that like working at a university setting like I just recently was, it's just a greenhouse of supercharged time. Like college time is not like normal time, you know. Folks become best friends who would give their lives for each other in over like 2 week spans of time, you know? And also, like, your friend group shifts often in college, too. Like, you have best friend in freshman year, and then, like, you drift apart, and suddenly you have a totally different group by junior year. And so I was involved in some of these things, and it was just clicking, and I just was miserable school-wise. And I went to, so they were like, oh, yeah, they've got the student center. You know, go and talk to the student counselor and help get them, because I was still an undeclared engineering major or something. And this is only because I did miserably on my SATs in English. I mean, I, you know, barely got half of them, I think, right? But I was pretty competent in math, actually. So, but I went there, I was like, this is terrible. And so they just gave me one of those generic, like, 200-question aptitude interest kind of tests, and it'll spit out what your top, here are good suggestions, here's a direction to go. So my top three were clergy, counselor, social worker. And she was like, the lady that worked there was like, I mean, you're at Georgia Tech. What are you doing here? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. So she's like, I mean, I think we study psychology here, you know, is that kind of thing. So I was like, okay. So I transferred to Georgia during that was the quarter system back then. So I was only at Georgia Tech 2 quarters and then transferred to Georgia. And so I became a Bulldog. But all that to say, I was at the next fall of my sophomore year. Georgia was playing at Georgia Tech, and I was there with my Georgia friends. But what happened is the first half I was wearing my Georgia stuff, but then Tech started winning. And this is what I'm ashamed of. I took off my Georgia shirt and had the Tech shirt underneath. I was like, yeah, see? Because I had some loyalty there. So I'm just a fair weather fan. So I transferred to University of Georgia and just continued that. I majored in social work so I could just keep reading the Bible and theology and not go to class. So it worked out really well for me, actually. And, got really involved in Young Life as a leader, and just I started seeing how I loved going on the high school campus, and my buddy Ben and I started a wrestling program at the school because they were underfunded and didn't have wrestling. We worked out with the football players, and we just started getting to know them. And it was just incredible to see, like, young people respond to somebody that was just a little bit older than them, but who was just trying to point them to the good news of God and Christ. Like, they were hungry for it. I'd take them camping and to camp and things like that, but just watching them give their lives over to Christ and to have their imaginations enlivened and awakened, I just thought, this is what I want to do the rest of my life. This is pretty good. It's pretty exciting. And so back in the 90s, you could graduate college and just be like, oh, what do I do now? You know, and that's kind of what I did. So I graduated and I happened to be signed up to do a one-month internship in New Orleans at a place called Desire Street Ministries. And, go back. So I'm in college doing all this Christian ministry, but, like, I had never been baptized. And I didn't even know that was a problem or weird or I didn't know enough, you know? So I bounced around to a bunch of different churches. And so I'd go to these, like, charismatic churches, and I tried to befriend a pastor who was in a more kind of Reformed tradition, but it just didn't work out timing-wise, and I just had a lot of friends that kind of straddled some worlds between kind of an Arminian and Calvinist kind of dimension. And I just didn't know, like, what I was. I was kind of a theological mutt. And so one summer... two summers I ended up working at a camp called Kennicott Camps. I was working at I showed up and they said, oh no, you're at the inner city camp. And so I had to drive all the way around the Ozark Lake there to get to this camp. And I fell in love with working with these urban tweens and teens and just watching them come alive in their faith. So when I went back to Georgia, I was mostly working with a lot of the black community in Athens on the east side. And I was coming back after my second year of doing this, and I was driving from Atlanta to Athens to get ready for school, and it was a Saturday night, and I was just praying. And, you know, when you're in college, you're super intense about everything. And I was just having this intense personal prayer time as I'm driving down the road. And I just felt convicted. Like, I haven't, like, landed in a church. I'm not really getting, like, mentored by anybody. I'm just, like, a wild card out there. And I drove by this white church building, and I was like, okay, Lord, I'll go there tomorrow. Just felt like I should go there. So I show up, and it's a Black Baptist church. It's a small, probably about the size of this space, with a choir, and it was awesome. It was banging. And I got to know that they invited me to stay for dinner on the grounds after a 2.5-hour worship service, and I did. And just kind of like Wilson Lattimore was the pastor there at Chestnut Grove Baptist Church, and just so grateful for him. He was a bivocational pastor. He worked in the hospital system and was the preacher, leader, teacher of this church. And I'd go with him sometimes to like Columbia Seminary in Atlanta, where he was taking classes, and just really liked it. So he started just kind of mentoring me. But it, strangely, simultaneously, I just threw all sorts of influences. I was reading a lot of more Reformed folks, and so I was kind of becoming more Reformed and more ecumenical at the same time in a weird way. And so by the time I went after college to Desire Street Ministries in New Orleans, they work with renewing and reinvigorating a downtrodden inner city community in New Orleans pre-Katrina. And so I went for the internship, loved it, loved what they were doing, the vision of raising up leadership from within the community. And so I got to go work alongside young men who had come out of this Desire neighborhood and were pouring back into it. And I learned so much. I'm so grateful for these guys who taught me so much about life, about following Christ, about what it means to be faithful. So during that time, I knew Beth, my wife, my much better half. She is incredible, and she's a very thoughtful, theological, and musical person. She has a wonderful voice. And so she would sing with, at the time, the director, Mo Leverett, and they would go on these kind of fundraising outreaches and things. And so she would sing on the albums and things like that. And she'd sing at church. So I always thought, wow, she's got an awesome voice. We knew each other casually at Georgia, but not super well. But what happened is we had a seminary professor from Reformed Theological Seminary come and do some theological training with us. And his name was Richard Pratt. And I started to just really like how he was approaching things. So I was like, okay, I'll take some of his classes, distance. And in 2002, distance education, at least at this seminary, meant they'll mail you some cassette tapes and a notebook with like a bunch of like papers in it. It was that physical, you know. And so Beth and I decided, well, let's take the Genesis to Joshua class together. And who knew that, like, reading about purity codes in Leviticus was going to be hot, but it was. And because so we shared the resources, and so we listened to the tapes together, and she took notes, and that worked out for me, too. And we shared the books, and so, yeah, it worked. So we just, through that, I asked her out, and she didn't have better options, and so we started dating, and within 10 months we were married. We got married in Louis Armstrong Park under the oak trees there, and then had a great celebration back at the Desire Street Ministries. Our church there had a gymnasium. And so it became a really cool start to our marriage, and we were kind of being sent out because, you know, I knew I was going to go to seminary. And Beth was deciding whether to go to seminary or to come to Desire Street. So it worked out that we were both at Desire Street, and then we both went to seminary together. So we moved to Orlando and did seminary at Reformed Theological Seminary. And we were part of a church plant downtown. So I have a history of being part of churches that are really tanking or going through a really hard time. And that happened here, where the pastor planting the church and had an affair, and the marriage blew up, and all the sad things. So we kind of just got started in public worship when it was like, never mind. And we were living in their backyard in their garage apartment. So that was super awkward. Yeah. So all that to say, I just learned, I think the ideal began to kind of get appropriately kind of reconfigured. I was pretty idealistic coming out of my ministry time in New Orleans with a lot of kind of like we're going to like carpe diem. Let's take the hill for Jesus. There's so much ministry to be done. And so Beth would say, she and some of her friends, they saw me as a ministry machine, just like somebody that was just like cranking it out, you know, all the time. Kind of what I think of Craig. Craig's a ministry machine. He's just, that's his dance name when the music comes on. This is a part of my story is, I think it was driving rickety vans around the streets of New Orleans with all the potholes and just wrestling stronger young men than me. But my back got like went out when I was in New Orleans towards the end of our time. And so I had a ruptured disc with all the, herniation and the, sciatica going down my legs. And it was really, really painful and just debilitating. And so I ended up having a surgery right as we were leaving New Orleans to alleviate the sciatica. So I kind of literally limped into seminary. And I think that was distorting for me and Beth because we had just started as a newlywed couple. We were, ascending. This is what we're supposed to do. And it just, it was really hard. A really hard time where I was really questioning God's goodness and faithfulness. You know, it was one of those like, God, is this how you treat your children? I think I was just having that existential crisis of, God, are you going to come through? So seminary was actually like some hard years because I was the guy in the back of the class. I never sat down for like 3 years. There's such pain there, and I think I got some really bad advice looking back, but that's what happened. So I'd only lay down or stand. I basically didn't sit anywhere for 3 years to the point where I was at one church where it was a funky-shaped sanctuary space where one part jutted closer to the stage than the rest, and I came in late, and that's where I had to be for the worship service, but I just stood. And when it was a Presbyterian church, so, you know, when the pastor was preaching, he kept looking over, and I could tell it was, like, wigging him out. And at some point, he stopped, and he was like, can I help you, sir? You know? Because it wasn't charismatic. They're not looking for a word from the Lord from somebody in the crowd. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I just have a back thing. Anyway, so that was me for, like, 3 years. And it was just really hard. And I was just wondering, God, what do you have for me? Because I don't think I can go into a context where I'm supposed to be doing sports and interacting with young people in a very active way. It really limited me. But Beth and I fortunately ended up with some really kind adults and friends who really came around us and cared for us. And during this time, Beth, she did the dual degree at seminary, so she has the biblical. So if you want to know about the Bible, talk to Beth. And if you want to know about counseling and psychology and the heart, talk to Beth. I'm just here. But we just received a real kindness from God through that. And I think just slowly, you know how you think things are really terrible and then you look back and you're like, oh, wait, it's not that bad. Or like when a kid falls and skins their knee and they're like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. And then like 3 minutes later, they're running around playing. I kind of felt like that. Like, I don't know what point things switched, but I think our view of kind of feeling like the woe is me switched to God is so good and gracious, and he's leading us more and more into freedom. And sometimes the things we encounter and go through because we're so clenched fist about how I want it to go and how I think it should be, God's sometimes just allowing circumstances that make us have to let go of our sense of control, our sense of knowledge, our sense of certainty, our sense of I have a destiny that I'm living into somehow that's not mine, but is a figment of my imagination. God was really gently releasing us from that. So to fast forward, we ended up in Birmingham at a Presbyterian church here. I called it faux Anglican for a while because we were using a lot of prayer book kind of sensibilities, Anglican dynamics, and I started going to St. Mary's of the Highlands. I lived in Southside, and I'd go pray with some of the ladies there on Tuesday or Thursday morning, and it was just really wonderful and just healing. Beth and I would use the Book of Common Prayer just devotionally in our house anyway. And I just started to kind of ask the question, am I an Anglican? You know, could it be? I don't know. And so through a lot of relationships from seminary and other places, got to connect with people both in the ACNA and in the Episcopal Church. And God's just kindness led us into the Episcopal Church. So at that time, I was asked to come here as a curate. So that's where some of you may remember me from 2015 and 16. We were here for almost a year and a half. And then was ordained by Bishop Greg Brewer in Central Florida and went down there and served in Orlando at the Cathedral Church there for a year and a half. And then was called to Gainesville, where those sinful gators live, and had to go serve among them. But that was a delightful time. It was really sad to leave because God had been building a really incredible, life-giving work there, seeing a lot of lives touched and shaped and healed. I mean, as a Presbyterian, all I did was baptize babies. As an Episcopalian, all I've done is baptize adults. I don't know what God's doing, but it was 13 of them in my 5 years there at UF, and I'm just, and these are people not from the church. Like, these are unchurched. Chapel of the Incarnation was the first church for a swath of people. They'd never been part of a church. So it's like really cool to see God's on the move. God is drawing people like me from outside the church into his body. And you just never know the ways and means he's going to do that. But yeah, it's been a real thrill. So I know that kind of catches us up to, and Craig, of course, was just gracious to say, Adam, you seem like you need some help. You want to come to Advent? And I said, yes.
It was actually, I was like the man from Macedonia. Come help us. Come help us. Yes.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Do you want Q&A? What
maybe,
do you?
Maybe time for one question, and then if you'd pray for us.
Did you get baptized?
Oh, yes, I did, by Wilson Lattimore at Chestnut Grove Baptist Church. You're right. I never completed that thought. I have a habit of doing that. Thank you. Victor?
Adam, you talked about your father a lot, but I don't think you mentioned your mother at all.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. So my father would say he's a believer. My mom is not. She's not appreciative of the Christian faith. And, you know, she has some good reasons. The why is there evil and pain in the world, and why does that happen to us? And that's a real hard hurdle for people. And, yeah.
What is God calling you to do here at the Advent?
I don't know. Do you know, Craig? I mean, well, this is the thing, and Beth would say this, I'm kind of a Swiss Army knife. I can go into a lot of settings. I mean, this is a formal setting. It's not probably my natural setting, right? I'm more of an informal person. And again, because I've been in that swath of, I've been like the only the only white person in a space, and I'm fine with that. And I've been in like super buttoned up spaces, all over the map. And so I can, you know, I can be with somebody in the hospital, and I can hang out and play basketball with kids on the street. So I don't know. But I do feel like I'm called to be a pastor. No matter where I am and how I am, I'm going to be pointing people to my only hope, which is the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I just think that's how God's used me in a lot of settings, and I don't know what that'll look like here, but I'm excited to partner with you all and to support and undergird your ministries. And, you know, Ephesians 4, it's equipping the saints for the work of ministry. I see a lot of ministers here that can bring about good news ministry here in Birmingham and beyond. So I'm excited about that. Thank you.
I'll just say, Brandon, it's a great question, Kevin. And, you know, more time for it later. One of the things, I mean, you hear from Adam this morning. One of the things, I've loved Adam for a lot of years now, and so, and tremendous respect for Adam and Beth. Not only their ministry, just people. And you hear that in hearing from Adam this morning. And so, one of the areas of ministry here is the canon missioner, and to some degree, that's a broad title, because it is certainly ministries that you would think about typically involving mercy and justice and serving our community, but it's also it's apologetics, it's evangelism, it's engagement and care for our community across the board. I think one of Adam's great gifts is, you know, one, God's wonderful pursuit of him, and just the way that it, we use the word winsome a lot, but it's just winsome. I mean, the way that his faith comes forth, the way that he builds relationships, and I think that's part of the excitement for us here is that there's some things that we definitely have in mind, but part of it, honestly, I think if we're being prayerful, is to say, all right, Lord, how would you direct our steps rather than our dictating? How would you dictate? How would you form and fashion? How would you direct our steps? And the absolute belief that God is trustworthy and will do that. And so, we're very grateful.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to dodge the question as much as I know it's broad, and I'm not coming with a presupposition that I know what's needed. It's more of a, I'm here to help figure out and partner with you. That's all I wanted to communicate. I just didn't do it well. Thank you, Craig.
That's the perfect answer.
I've told people when they're like, what is a canon missioner? You know, I'm like, it's just Episcopalian for outward-facing ministry. You know, that's kind of how I try to tell non-Episcopal folks what it is. So. Sure. Most gracious Heavenly Father, we thank you for your loving kindness to us. Thank you that your fingerprints are all over every story in this room, in this parish, in this city, in this world. Help us to continue to discover where your grace is at work and to reflect that to one another and to others so that your name might be lifted up and you draw more people to yourself. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you will join us at one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.